Radio. This is a talk by Paul Morrissey on the Seven Deadly Sins. It was recorded in the courtyard of the University of Notre Dame, Sydney on Wednesday, the 12th of September, 2012. Paul Morrissey is a lecturer in theology at the University of Notre Dame and teaches units in Christology, Trinity, Fundamental Theology, Ecclesiology, and Moral Theology.
Okay, so the seven deadly sins. I'm always a bit worried when someone asks me to talk about the seven deadly sins because I presume they think I'm an expert at the sins.
Expert in sinning. Expert.
But in fact, we're all experts at sinning, aren't we? So I think that's very true. The seven deadly sins, they're interesting because, one, they're not found in Scripture. So they're something that were developed in the 5th century. One of the first monks, John Cassian, had a list. I think his list was 9 deadly sins. And in our understanding of the deadly sins, they weren't listed until the 6th century by St. Gregory the Great, the Pope. And he came up with the 7 deadly sins as we know them today. But I think the best or the most important thing about the deadly sins is that they can be really helpful for us in actually examining our consciences. So I actually use them to prepare myself for confession, to see how I'm progressing in the spiritual life, to see where I stand in the face of these deadly sins. In fact, the correct title for the seven deadly sins are the 7 capital sins. Capital coming from the Latin capus, meaning head. So it's from these 7 heads, if you like, that all sins can be found. So they're not in fact sins in themselves, but we can locate all sins within these 7, if you like, heads, sometimes in more than one. So what I'll do is I'll just briefly take us through these 7 deadly sins, highlighting, you know, why are they deadly, what's the main dimension of these sins, and also speak about, you know, sort of antidotes to these sins in terms of the great spiritual tradition we have in terms of this discussion on sin and combating them with various virtues. So the first sin in the list is pride. So pride's considered the deadliest of all the sins. Now, like all sins, in fact, but like the 7 deadly sins, all the 7 deadly sins, what they are actually distortions of a good thing. And that's why they're so alluring. Sin is alluring. Why? Because they take something that's good and that we're drawn towards, but they distort them. So pride is like this. So what pride does is it distorts what's meant to be a healthy love of the self. Okay? So we're meant to love ourselves. Christ says that. We're meant to love ourselves. But our love for ourselves is meant to be ordered. That means it's ordered, directed towards God. So we love God first, we love our neighbours, and we love ourselves. It's an ordered love. What pride is, in the sinful sense, is a disordered love. It takes love for self as the primary love. And so this is why it's a deadly sin. And for some writers, it's the deadliest sin, because it's, in some sense, the root of all sin. What sin is saying no to God. And that's what pride is. I'm above God, so I'm not going to follow God's will. I'm going to follow my will. So not God's will be done, but my will be done. Another way of speaking about pride is to say that it's it encloses the universe into ourselves. In fact, the universe, the cosmos, the meaning of life becomes really small when we're full of pride, because we just focus on me. So how do we get out of pride? Well, the key virtue is humility. So St. Bernard of Clairvaux was asked, what are the 4 most important virtues? And he said, do you want to come around? You can get a river. St. Bernard said, what are the most 4 important virtues? He said, humility, 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 and humility. So it's really key. Dante, the great Italian poet, he in his reflection on purgatory, so the 2nd volume of his Divine Comedy, so it's 3 volumes, he looks at heaven, hell, and purgatory. In purgatory, he has a meditation on the 7 deadly sins, and he has the way of those in purgation. And purgatory is, in fact, the 7 deadly sins. And each who had that tendency towards one of the sins is given a certain punishment. So for the proud in Dante's Purgatory, they were forced to carry big boulders on their backs so that they were forced to look at the ground. Why is that? Because the ground in Latin, humus, meaning where we get the word humility from. Yeah? We're low to the ground. We look at the ground. And so humility is the key for combating pride. Okay. The second deadly sin is avarice, or greed, we'd perhaps say today. But some writers, including St. Paul, seems to think that this is the deadliest of the sins. So again, it's a sin. Why? Because it takes a good, worldly things, but distorts our what's meant to be an ordered love for them into something disordered. So the worldly things become our primary objective, and therefore we become greedy, avarice, and this becomes deadly. All right, there are two forms of greed. One is where we desire what someone else has. So they've got a new iPhone, and I want that, you know, or a new car, I want that. The other form of greed, though, is hoarding our possessions. Hoarding what we do have. This is my car. This is my house. This is my money. So they're the two forms of greed. Hoarding or desiring what someone else has. So this is a very common... this is obviously a very common sin today for us. Okay. How do we get over greed? Okay, the key to get over greed for us is obviously to is a traditional way in the church is to be generous. Okay, to give away that which we have, and this obviously helps us overcome hoarding. So this is mine, but in fact, you know, I'm going to give it away. I'm going to lend it to someone. So giving things away is a key to overcoming greed, but also ascetical practice in general. Trying to go without things helps us to be detached from worldly things. Some of the Christian writers, spiritual writers, have encouraged us even to be generous to the point of foolishness. And what this means, because often, and I think this is true today, is when we want to be generous, we want to be attached to our generosity. I'm going to give some money, but I want to know where that money's going. Make sure it's going to something good. I'm going to follow it up. I'm going to investigate this charity. And, you know, that's not a bad thing. It can be prudent. But if we're obsessed like that, sometimes it's good just to give something and say, okay, this is for you. Or to throw a party that's quite expensive, which is a traditional medieval thing, for the Lord to throw a party for everyone, including the poor. And some would say, well, why didn't you use that money to do this? But in fact, it's this spirit of generosity that should be cultivated as well. So that's avarice. The third deadly sin is envy. Now, envy is the least alluring of all the sins. All it does is give us sorrow and grief. Because as St. Thomas says that envy is sorrow at another's good. Someone else has something good materially, as their character or whatever, and we're sorrowful because we want that. So envy is sorrow at another's good. So it's not very alluring. The deadly aspect of envy is that it actually can turn to hatred, and we see this a classic example of this in film is the film Amadeus. Has anyone seen Amadeus? It's a fantastic film on Mozart. It's not very historical, but it's a fantastic film. And it's about this composer at the time of Mozart, Salieri, who becomes completely obsessed by Mozart's gifts. And he sets out to destroy Mozart, purely from an envious point of view. And in the end, he destroys himself, commits suicide. So envy can really attack at the heart of community, family. It lies at the heart of, you know, so many family disputes and whatever. It's really deadly in that sense. Now, envy, traditionally, one of the things to help us combat envy is is compassion. So envy is sorrow at another's good, whereas compassion is a desire to suffer with another's loss, to suffer with another who is undergoing, you know, something that's that's not good. To go down deep with someone who's actually lacking something. And so it's, in a sense, the opposite of envy. So to cultivate compassion in our lives is a way to actually get out of, you know, this deadly sin of envy. The fourth deadly sin is anger. Now, anger, we need to again just clarify the sinful anger, because there is such a thing as just anger. Just anger is when there is something that's not just that's occurring. We should be righteously angry about it. So famously, Christ is righteously angry about those who are corrupting the temple by selling things. So people often say, oh, gee, Christ sinned because he got angry. But no, that's a just anger. And we're called to be justly angry. You know, in the face of injustice, we can be angry. But it needs to be an ordered anger. It can't be disordered. When it's disordered, that becomes a deadly sin. You know, I always give the example, speaking about this, is on the road, you know, road rage. So I often fall into this, you know, completely disordered anger. You know, there's some person's in front of me, you know, and they're driving. And I think they're deliberately driving slow to stop me from getting somewhere on time. You know, someone a bit old, you know, who's driving along. Or, you know, I get three red lights in a row. It's a conspiracy, you know. And you start to swear at the lights and, you know, get really angry. It's so disordered, you know. So this is what we mean by the deadly sin of anger. And again, it's like envy can quickly lead to hatred, which is obviously, if you do something out of hatred, it's a mortal sin. So, you know, it's very deadly. And again, anger cuts at the heart of family and community life, very much so. How do we get out of anger? Well, traditionally, one of the Beatitudes has been seen as the antidote to anger, and that is, blessed are the meek. Blessed are the meek. Unfortunately, when we hear the word meek, we often think of what? Weak, because it rhymes, probably. So Christ doesn't say, blessed are the weak. No. Christ says, blessed are the meek. In fact, meekness, perhaps the best way to describe it is in the Middle Ages, that a Christian knight was called to be chivalrous. And that was another way of saying being meek. So being strong in the face of injustice, but being able to direct one's, if you like, anger, or direct one's strength to what is unjust. To protect the women and children, this is the idea of the chivalrous knight, and then to attack the villain. So again, this is what meekness is, to be strong in the face of injustice, but to be ordered in one's anger. So that's the antidote to the deadly sin of anger. Fifth deadly sin is sloth. Sloth, often we equate with laziness. Laziness isn't exactly what sloth is. What sloth is, St. Thomas says, sloth is sorrow at spiritual goods. It's almost like spiritual boredom. Oh, God, who cares? Ah, prayer, who cares? it's this almost a boredom in the face of the great spiritual good that, you know, is his union with God. This is obviously deadly, isn't it? Because it leads to a lack of prayer life, lack of sacramental life. Now, today, it's interesting that one of the criteria of falling into this sin is boredom. And it's interesting today that we are so busy and yet we're often so bored. We just want a constant entertainment. So if, for someone to sit still, even, you know, for this talk, is difficult today. Because everyone wants instant entertainment. So spiritual sloth is rampant today, as you could probably attest to, Father. You know, people find it very difficult to sit still and cultivate a listening ear to God, because they want, you know, gee, I've got to check my email, I've got to look at Facebook, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. You know, I even find it, you know, teaching theology, people find it very difficult to actually sit down and contemplatively read something. need it more instant. So it's a difficult one today for us to get over. And again, one of the Beatitudes is the antidote to this, when Christ says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness," to desire to be holy, have this desire to go forward. Dante in the Divine Comedy says, for the slothful, their punishment is just to run around, you know, saying holy things. You have this vision of them, you know, sprinting. So it's this is the opposite to being slothful. The next deadly sin is lust. The sixth deadly sin is lust. And it's interesting that the spiritual writers tell us that lust is not the deadliest sin. We often have to think this is the deadliest sin. In fact, St. Thomas says that God often allows us to fall into lust because it's the sin where we feel the most shame and guilt. And this leads us to go deeper in the sense of humility. Because shame and guilt automatically say, "Oh, gee, I've been sinful," which leads us into repentance. So often, St. Thomas says, God allows us to fall into lust to help us go deeper and root out perhaps pride and something that's more deadly. But lust is the deadly sin of, again, it's taking a good, so sexual love and desire, and in a disordered way, desiring that, and therefore objectivizing the other person. And this is obviously a sin. Again, one of the Beatitudes is helpful here, the Beatitude, "Blessed are the pure in heart." And what does Christ tell us? If we're pure in heart, we will... What's the reward? We will see God. So the pure of heart, when we have an ordered heart, when we love truly, then we see God. And this is what, you know, even sexual love is ordered to that, to seeing God in an ordered way. And the final sin is usually considered the least deadly, and that is gluttony. So gluttony is a disordered love for food and drink. And it takes two forms. So one form is a disordered love for the very finest food and drink. I will only eat the very finest things. I think a little bit today we have, that's still around, but a little bit today we have almost a disordered love for only the very, very healthy food. And I will not eat anything else. You know, and someone invites you to their house and says, "No, I won't be eating that or that or that." That's a form of gluttony too. So someone who's being generous and opening up, I won't have that, thank you. You know, I think that's a subtle form of gluttony as well. But the most common form is often just to eat and drink to above what we need. So I'll just keep eating or I'll just keep drinking. Now the Catholic tradition has two antidotes to both these forms of gluttony, and that is feasting and fasting. So we feast, and what do we do when we feast? We take a spiritual truth and a spiritual feast. So, for example, the resurrection of Christ, the greatest feast that we have. And what do? We say, okay, we had the feast in the liturgy, and we continue that in a human way through food and drink. So we get the finest lamb, we get the finest food, we cook it as best we can, we get fine wines, and we feast it as it should be. And that's taking the goods of the earth and exalting God with them. So it helps us in that first form of gluttony of, yeah, yes, it's good to have the finest things, but in an ordered way, directed to God. Whereas the other form of gluttony is the antidote to that is fasting. So again, it fits in with the liturgy. So we fast, we go without. So obviously Lent is famous, and Fridays. We go without in order to, in a sense, train our bodies to be more conformed to having an ordered love for created goods, ordered towards God. And so that's an antidote. I think a great film regarding the first type of regarding feasting is Babette's Feast. Has anyone seen Babette's Feast? It's a Danish film made in the 1980s. It won the Academy Award for Best Foreign Film. It's a fantastic film. It's very Catholic. And what happens is that there's this very Protestant village in Denmark, and there's two old ladies there in this village who were the pastor's daughters, and they're very strict and austere, so they don't like no alcohol, no fine foods, very austere. And anyway, one day they take in a French chef to be their maid, and she cooks only what they like, and it's very, you know, basic foods and whatever. But one day she wins the lottery, and she's so thankful to these ladies. She says, I want to do a feast for you. And she gets the finest food, you know, spends months on this menu. And the sisters are really worried. You know, they think, oh my goodness, you know, what are we going to do? And they tell the village, they say, look, we're just for Babette's sake, we're going to eat it, but we're not allowed to enjoy it. We're just going to be very austere. Okay. And anyway, the feast starts, and they gradually just come to it, you know. They think it's the most magnificent thing, done with such love and care and glorifying God, that it results in this real healing in the village and healing amongst the whole congregation. So it's a really Catholic vision of the sacraments, really, in that. But it's a great film, if you want to see it, Babette's Feast. So there are the seven deadly sins with some perhaps thoughts about how to combat them. But I think the deadly sins are really important for us to begin to highlight. I think it was Pius XII said last century that the greatest heresy of the 20th century was a loss of the sense of sin. And in many senses, it's even more true today. So we need to cultivate a healthy sense of this, that, you know, I am a sinner, that I do sin. Where is my sin coming from? Am I more, you know, in terms of these seven deadly sins, is this where I need to work on? Or is this where I need to, in a sense, train myself more spiritually to overcome this particular tendency I have to anger or lust? Or am I full of pride? Or all those things. It can be really helpful in growing in the spiritual life, is to use the sins as like a mirror for us, particularly for confession, but even just in general, you know, in gross in the spiritual life.